kick this off. Well, thank you for coming today. Considering that it's sunny outside and it's 3:30 and you're going to come here and listen to backup, I appreciate you attending. So my job here is to actually sort of make backup exciting for you again. So I know I've got a tough task ahead, but hopefully I can do that. So my name is Michael Porfirio. I'm the Director of Systems Engineering for Commvault Australia New Zealand, and Chris Gondek is my Principal Architect for Australia as well. So the topic today is Beyond Backup, the next generation Commvault data platform. So before I start, typical disclaimer, everything I'm about to say, you can't hold against me and you can't hold me to it, so I'll click right past that. The agenda. So going to focus on the Commvault data platform, talk about what we do in the cloud, what's the type of lifecycle management we can do for virtual machines and the cloud, and some use cases and demo. So probably going to do about 20 to 30 minutes of PowerPoint and then mainly demo. Okay, so we'll give a bit of a high-level picture of actually what new things are coming in the platform, how we can actually help you in your virtual machine environments, as well as the cloud, of course, and then actually show you what it actually looks like on the console itself. So, and before I get into things, I sort of like to start with the concept of, you know, why do we back up? I think sometimes people forget why we do backup. They sort of assume it's a bit like an insurance policy. You just have to have it, you know, you can't not have it, right? But you have different parts of the business sort of look at it differently. So IT tends to look at it from an operational recovery perspective, so sort of a break-fix type perspective. The business is actually really looking at data retention, you know, legislative requirements, because they actually have to keep data for a certain amount of time. And a lot of people don't even look at the data challenge, right? It's usually those first two. The challenge with that, of course, though, is no one really focuses on the data retention problem, and that's actually probably the most expensive part of any sort of organization. And I like to tell a bit of a story that sort of sets this context, and this probably sounds familiar to you, right? So we actually had a customer, and I removed all the names to protect the innocent, so to speak. So about 2005, they had a particular project. They had a set of data that they were trying to protect. When they actually went to the business themselves, the challenge was that they asked the business, so what type of retention and how long do I need to keep this data for? It was about 200 gigs, and the business pretty much didn't know, and they sort of said, look, forever, basically. The problem was, is as you fast forward to that, that was now close to 300 terabytes of data, which equated to many hundreds of thousands of tapes sitting in a warehouse. And the problem with that scenario was it's costing, you know, 60, 70 grand a month to keep those tapes. However, if someone needed to actually retrieve any of that data, it's almost impossible to do, because you couldn't actually find the data. And there's like many petabytes in the back end. And in fact, the storage of that retention was actually costing more than the production data. So the problem with that is that, so why do we back up in the first place? And in a lot of instances, and that's just one example, but there's many examples where we sort of take an approach to backup, and a lot of times the business doesn't really know how long they need to keep it for. And you've got these huge data stores of backup, but you can't actually recover anything because you don't know where anything is, right? It probably sounds familiar. A few of you are nodding your heads. And what's compounding that is modern. If you look at modern day, you know, cloud. I'm sure you guys are probably sick of hearing about the cloud today, but it's here, right? We're all moving to it. We've been talking about it for a few years, but people are actually using it in anger now. And it doesn't necessarily solve the problem. In fact, probably makes it a bit more complex now, because now you've got data which was sitting on-premise, maybe in a tape warehouse, but now sitting out in the cloud. You know, security demands, you know, you have to know where your data is, what data do you have, should you be keeping it, is it secure, who has access to it, and so on and so forth. Anywhere computing, you know, bring your own devices here. At Commvault, as an example, we have a bring your own device policy. You can actually get a mobile phone or a tablet device from Commvault, but most people actually choose to bring their own device, and IT actually has to manage that. And interesting around anywhere computing, and Microsoft sort of touched on it at the keynote, if you went to the keynote yesterday, around people are actually creating data on these endpoints now. It's no longer just, it used to be just devices to consume information, right? So you kind of used your phone to read your emails or read the news or a tablet device, whatever happens. But people are starting to create information on that. People have always done it on their laptops, right? Are you protecting that information? What's actually out there? Can you protect it? Can you actually see what type of information is stored on those devices? And data growth. I mean, some of these numbers are, you know, huge. Some organizations are growing anywhere between 40 to 50% year on year, which is just enormous. And that's partly because of, you know, there are things like machines generating information. We're generating information. We all like taking photos of each other, of ourselves, of our food, or whatever the hell it is, right? And that's just growing astronomically. And the challenge that we've actually had, going back to that original story, is we've been sort of using products that are about 30 years old, you know, techniques and processes that just don't scale in this new order. You know, you're sort of protecting information or looking at backup. Back in the day, we used to measure things in gigabytes. Right? Now it's terabytes. In fact, petabytes. In fact, most of the customers we speak to have got petabytes of information. It's quite alarming. And they come to us because they just don't know what to do with it. Simply backing it up and putting it over there and then closing the door is just not cost effective. Moving it to the cloud is, yeah, maybe you'll save some cost, but you still haven't actually fixed or solved the problem, right? And this is where really Commvault has actually been focused on in the last 20 years. And basically what we've done is we've singly focused on this idea of data and information management, okay? And what we basically built was what's called the Commvault Data Platform, right? Single product, okay? Single silo of information, not a backup product and a separate archive product and a separate endpoint protection product and another one for deduplication, another one for replication, and so on and so on and so forth. It's a single product and a single source of truth, okay? So the platform itself, this is sort of a high-level overview of it, but from the top here, we pretty much can ingest information from anywhere. If it's got data attached to it and it's running an operating system, in fact, it doesn't even have to run an operating system in some instances, we can actually access that data and protect that data for you, okay? We can ingest that data into the platform itself. This then actually goes into what we call our virtual repository. All the virtual repositories is effectively allows you to then store that secondary copy wherever you want. So it could be on premise, it could be on tape, it could be in the cloud. And we keep track of that for you. In fact, what the virtual repository really does is it effectively puts that secondary copy on the right tier of storage for the right retention level. It's as simple as that. Completely policy driven, so that you actually know where it's actually sort of sitting. And if you actually need to retrieve that copy, it'll tell you where it is and pull it back for you. All done through a single console. Okay, they're not separate consoles, one for backup and one for recovery or one for archive. We can also, from an archive perspective, we can turn a backup copy into an archive copy and provide a different level of retention without moving any additional data. Now, once we've actually backed up something, and we could have captured that through a snapshot, it could have been through a simple streaming backup, a Hyper-V backup, doesn't matter what it is, we can actually then turn that copy into an archive copy because it's basically sitting inside the virtual repository. All we do is just change the policy associated with it. It also provides deduplication. So it stores everything in a storage-optimized format. It provides encryption. So if you basically have security requirements, we can do two-factor authentication to ensure that nobody gets access to it. Compression, and it also can do replication. What sits over the top of this, and this probably should be at the top here, is our single index. And the single index I sometimes jokingly refer to inside of Commvault as the secret sauce, right? Because what the single index actually does, it's not an index like you'd normally know a backup product to have. So a backup product might give you information as to a file name, a location where the file was backed up from or archived from, a modification date, an access time, et cetera, et cetera. We actually go a bit further. We actually provide a content index and metadata index of all the information inside of your organization that comes through this particular index. Why is that powerful? So in the example I gave at the very beginning, or other examples you can think of, if I said to you, I need record 169 with the name Michael Porfirio in it, how would you find that information? Of every single piece of information in your organization that had those references in it, how would you find it? With this, you just tap it into the console and it actually comes back and says, right, I can see an email over here, I can see some SharePoint data over here, I can see there was something on the file system here, I can see something that was on someone's laptop. Collect all that information, regardless of where it's sitting. So regardless of whether it's in the public cloud, even a SaaS cloud, a private cloud, or actually on-premise, which is a really, really powerful idea. It sort of takes that idea of like, well, I don't know what I have, to actually now I can actually mine what I have and understand not only could I find the information that I need, but I can actually work out what I need to keep. Rather than just keeping everything forever, you actually get the tools now to actually understand, well, what is it that I actually need to keep as a business? And this is all managed, like I said, through a single console. Right? There's a single management console, simple, single reporting console, and single operations for operations as well. However, we haven't stopped there. So recently we've just, as the IT sector has started to change, because we have a single platform and because we actually wrote the thing from scratch, we've never acquired a single company in the history of the company itself, what we've actually been seeing in the industry is things are changing. So open standards. A lot of customers are now looking for an open standard sort of methodology to protect their data, or in fact across their entire organization. Open APIs and things like that. And because what they're trying to do is they don't want to be locked into vendors anymore. Okay, so when you bought a backup product as an example, you're sort of locked into that backup product. If you want to move from backup vendors, you kind of got to start from scratch. So what we've actually done with the platform itself, we've actually started to open it up. So we've provided different access methods of access to the actual platform. On the right-hand side here, you have your standard way of doing it, which is your agents and options, which I'm sure everyone's quite familiar with. You know, we have things for SQL, Exchange, SharePoint, Windows File Server, Oracle, Linux, Windows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, we've probably got the broadest range of agents and options and traditional methods for virtual machines to back up anything. However, there's all these other sort of methods that people are now asking us to actually provide in the platform, which we have done now. So from the left-hand side, we've got web and cloud. So REST APIs, pretty basic. If you go into our product and you go into our cloud drop-down box, we have every single public cloud provider available on the market, including, obviously, Azure. And later on, I'll talk about some use cases around Azure, and Chris will be demoing that as well. We have your common APIs, things like NFS, block storage and object storage. You know, the ability to actually, and all of these APIs, I should mention, they're all pull and push as well. So you can bring data into the platform and also push it out in its native format. Okay, so what that's basically doing is actually opening up the data for different ways of accessing that information for your users. But so for object, we have an object APIs. We have NFS storage. We support pretty much all the major storage array vendors on the market, including their snapshot technologies, to actually help you do those quick recovery copies. We have an ODBC connection for things like BI and visualization tools, and I'll get into this one a little bit later on. We have SaaS app integration for things like O365 and Salesforce, and that list is going to grow. So for O365, which it's interesting because I've been standing at the booth for the last 2 days, and I've had like at least 10 or 15 people ask me, I've gone to O365, I love it, but how do I do compliance archiving with it? We can give that to you, and we can take that out of O365 back onto premise, or you could actually put that archive back into Azure, or if you wanted to, into a different cloud provider. It doesn't really matter to us. All we are is effectively the data mover, and what we do is we keep track of where the data started from, where it ended up, we index it on the way through, and then basically we help manage it in its entire life cycle. But we haven't stood still there as well. What we're hearing from customers is around these new recovery, what we like to call the new recovery mandates. A lot of organizations don't have, their RPOs and RTOs are very, very tight. They don't have time to wait for recovery. So what we've actually done now is we've got this thing called live copy, which actually allows you to natively access the backup copies without actually restoring them. Okay, so from a file data perspective, you can actually mount that information directly via an NFS share, instantly read and write to the actual, read that information straight away. From a virtual machine perspective, you can actually, example, if you have a virtual machine outage, you could start the virtual machine directly out of the virtual repository and have instant, almost immediate access to that virtual machine. You can just, basically, you could actually spin it up as just as read-only copy if you wanted to start with. Or in fact, if you want to restore it, you can spin it up, start using it immediately, and in the background what we do is we actually start synchronizing it back to its original location, right? But you get access to that machine straight away. And finally, on the new version 11, extensible analytics. So big data, right? A big buzzword that everyone had heard for the last couple of years. Everyone got very excited about it. And the thing that I heard the most was like, right, well, how do I do it? And the challenge with big data type sort of ideas was you actually had to go and make another copy of your data once again to then run some analytics and hope you actually found something inside of it. What we realize is we actually got most of your data in your backup product. Why not leverage the backup data and your archive data that already exists inside of something like the Commvault data platform? So we've opened it up. We've put our own actual analytics and query ingest engine over the top, which basically means a couple of things. We provide some tools so you can do some analytics on your actual data itself. However, it's opened up to third parties, third-party APIs to actually read and write the repository. Like I said, because we've gone to open standards, it's no longer in a proprietary format. It's readable. It can be readable by anybody. You give them access to the API, you connect to it. So if you're running a business intelligence type of tool, you can connect to it, and now you can actually start to run your analysis on that data set. And a lot of times, the data that you actually need is probably sitting in here anyway, so making another copy doesn't really make sense. The whole concept of data lakes and all that other stuff, it's just expensive. You need to go and buy more hardware, more storage, more cloud, etc. Why not do it if it's already sitting here? Okay. Now, I mentioned cloud a few times, and I mentioned software as a service platforms and things like that. And the reason I've done that is really about this idea of welcome to the era of cloud first. And it's probably not I suspect in the last 12 months, this has really switched. From last 12 months when I was here, A lot of people interested in the cloud, not necessarily going there just yet. Now, pretty much everyone has a cloud strategy of some description if they're not using it already. So the markets have changed. And what we're hearing from our customers, this particular quote, I should say, is an interesting one, though. So basically, by 40% of all the information at some point by 2020 will touch the cloud in some sort of way, but only 15% of that data will maintain in a cloud. And what that actually means is that the data retention challenges that I've been talking about are still valid. Going to the cloud doesn't necessarily solve that. It actually helps because you can spin things up and spin things down, and you can buy storage on capacity and all those great benefits that you've heard of cloud. It's fantastic, but you still have to manage it. You still have to know where your data is. You still have to have a way of managing the life cycle of your virtual machines, of your information, of your archives, of your email, et cetera, et cetera. And what we're hearing from customers, you know, virtualization first is a given. If it can run as a virtual machine, I need to show you how it runs in the cloud, right? You know, if you intend to add a server to my DC, prepare to show me how I can eliminate 10 others. And cloud is not just a storage location. And this is an interesting one. Last vendor here kept talking about cloud as storage. Don't waste my time with only that single dimension of cloud capability. And I would completely 100% agree on that. You know, you can, and I'm about to show you, when you actually use the cloud as a backup target, which a lot of people will do, there's so much more you can do with it once you've actually got it up there using something like Commvault that it's not just simply a storage location. Right, and that actually helps sort of change the mindset of actually how you can actually use a cloud target. Right, so what are deployment models for Commvault? Okay, we can pretty much deploy everywhere, right? So traditional on-premise, your private cloud, hybrid cloud, public cloud, we don't care. It does not bother us. We're a software-only solution, which gives us the flexibility to pretty much run however we please. Specifically to Azure, you can send data to it, backup data that's in it, or send data from it. It's as simple as that, okay? And once you've actually got data up there, it's actually quite, like I said, I'll get to in a second, it's actually quite powerful what you can do with it. So, virtual machine lifecycle in the public cloud. Now, this is extremely important, because basically what this is it's all about the cradle to sort of grave idea around your virtual machine infrastructure, right? And what Commvault provides, on top of being able to protect all your physical assets, along with your endpoints, archive, et cetera, we also obviously have very strong virtual machine protection capabilities across all virtualization technologies, from Hyper-V to VMware to KVM to OVM, you name it, we can pretty much back it up, even Citrix Xen, okay? We give you ability for configuration, provisioning, operation, disaster recovery, et cetera. And it's really sort of built around this sort of concept of build, protect, and optimize. So on a build perspective, using templates, and this is something that Chris is going to demo later, we can actually help you provision virtual machines on your on-premise or actually in the cloud in Azure itself. And you might be thinking, we've already got tools that do that. But when you're in a disaster recovery situation, you actually want to be able to provision things so you can restore to them. We can actually completely automate that process for you. And you can actually even give end users the capability of doing their own restores and their own backups. If you have database guys who really want to be in control of their own virtual machine infrastructure and be able to restore that information, you can provide them role-based access so they can actually only see their machines that belong to them and actually build those templates up in Azure, lock down what type of machines they can actually provision, so they're not provisioning like a G-class thing which costs like, I think it was $12 an hour, whatever it is, something small, and actually then recover that data. From a protect perspective, what we do is provide the ability to actually customize the way you protect your virtual infrastructure, whether it's actually on-premise or in the cloud. There's, you know, the reality is that some vendors sort of force you down one path for everything. And the example I give here is you wouldn't protect your Exchange cluster or a DBA application the same way you do as a file server, right? There's different ways you want to do it. So there's sometimes you want to do hardware snaps, sometimes you want to do streaming, sometimes you want to use the hypervisor backups. You can do all of that with this technology. Okay? You're not locked down to one specific path. We have also agentless application aware, so we can actually inject the agents into the actual virtual machine so you don't actually have to deploy agents themselves. We make it simple, we make it easy. And not only can you do that on your on-premise, you can also do that up into the cloud itself. From an optimization perspective, this is really about managing your virtual machines once they've actually been created. How do you actually manage things like virtual machine sprawl? So what we introduced was a concept of virtual machine archiving. So you might be familiar with archiving with data and emails and things like that. Similar sort of concept, because what we found is in a typical 150 virtual machine environment, just say, as an example, you know, there's anywhere between 50 to 150Ks worth of wastage that occurs with resources. And that's because people love spinning up virtual machines. They're fantastic. They're really simple, easy, and quick, right? And in a cloud environment, that could even be even worse, because even simpler. What we can actually do is, based on some policies, you can actually go out and check your virtual machines, and based on things such as network utilization, storage utilization, CPU utilization, the last time they were accessed, etc., we can actually shut it down, or shut down that virtual machine, leave it there for a little while. If no one then touches it, we can then actually archive it off your primary storage off to a cheaper tier of storage and actually stub the virtual machine behind. So if they actually need to pull it back, they actually can, which is actually quite a really nice and simple way of saving huge amount of cost inside your data center. So how do we get data to the cloud? All right. Quite simply, right? So you have a virtual machine or a physical box. We don't mind which one. Now, a lot of times the way people will do it, they'll firstly do a backup copy locally to a media agent. Now, what a media agent basically is a data mover. And so it's just some compute with some storage and effectively you're backing up copy. Or you can actually back it up directly to the cloud. You don't actually have to do an on-premise copy first. You can actually just do it straight to the cloud. We don't require any dedicated appliances. And this is a big key differentiator between us and a lot of other people. We do not require any appliances, okay? Appliances have their place, but the challenge with appliances can be that you actually have to access the data through the appliance. And once you've got the data up in the cloud, then you also need it. Then you might, it actually can be difficult to then access that data from within the cloud without pulling it back again, okay? So we don't need any appliances. You can also put a media agent up in the cloud as well. So how do we actually push the data down? So natively, we do a backup job or an archive job. We do multiple streams. So multiple streams is different to multiplexing, which you might be familiar with getting throughput through tapes. We parallelize those streams, so we actually get greater performance. We then actually leverage the multi-block upload capability of Azure, right, which effectively then is tunable. And we do a pre-process on the media agent, which sort of optimizes the data in the format and then actually shifts it up to the cloud itself. This gives us huge amounts of bandwidth through a dedicated connection. We wouldn't recommend you do this over an internet link, but if you're using ExpressRoute, absolutely. So, you got the data in the cloud, now what do you do with it, right? And this is the bit that sort of changes, right? So what I've spoken about so far is, all right, backup, who cares, right? But what about all of these test cases with your backup data, which most people probably don't even think about using it for that? So DR, you know, a lot of people's disaster recovery plans are pretty much, you know, I've got a stack of tapes, and if I have a disaster recovery, I might go restore it somewhere. Most customers I'm talking to now aren't looking at building a secondary data center. They're thinking about leveraging the cloud, but they're not actually sure how to use it for DR, okay? Test dev, a lot of times you need a production-grade hardware to do test and dev, but it's too expensive. Why not actually use it in the cloud? Why not actually get the data up there and actually spin it up and spin it down? Analytics, right? You know, you've got to do a massive analytics job. Why not actually spin up a whole bunch of virtual machines up in the cloud and do analytics? Migration, portability, and so on and so forth. But what this is all about is once you've actually got your backup data up there, you can now leverage it for different things, okay? You can actually use it for DR. You can use it for test dev, analytics, and so on and so forth. You're not just locked into actually, once again, I've got a secondary backup copy, and I spent all this money, but I've actually got no real use out of it. I don't even know what it is. Okay, so what I'll drill into is a couple of the examples that Chris will actually demo. So disaster recovery into the cloud, pretty straightforward, and there's a box missing there, but anyway. Similar sort of process, you know, a lot of times you'll make a copy locally, and then what you'll do is you'll do a replicated backup copy to the cloud. Replicated backup copy is different to a replication copy, right? The difference being is you can have different retention levels on this one and this one here, okay? It's not synchronous, right? Problem with replication? Garbage in, garbage out, right? You get corruption over here, you get corruption over here. That's not a backup copy, right? For real-time high availability, that's you kind of need that. But if you actually genuinely want a backup copy for disaster recovery purposes, this is sort of having different retentions on site A and site B is essential. We do this in a deduplicated fashion as well, right? So we have this thing called deduplicated asynchronous streaming hash, which just rolls off the tongue, but it's dash copy for short, right? And that's a deduplicated copy. Once it's up there, we can use the provisioning policies I mentioned before. So in the event of a disaster, you can actually kick off these provisioning policies that will create the virtual machines infrastructure for you so that you can actually start to restore that information straight into the cloud. Now, the nice thing about our solution is we also have this up here We also have a workflow built into the product itself, so you can completely automate this entire process. So the backups will just continue to happen in the background as you normally would. You schedule them. They would actually happen on a daily basis, weekly fulls, all that sort of stuff that you're used to, in a deduplicated fashion up to the cloud. When you actually have it, when disaster hits you, you actually can press a button and all of these actions over here will be completely automated. You could just bring up one box, you could bring up your entire data center. It's completely up to you. And the nice thing is, as before, once you've actually got that, you can actually use the same method for test and dev. There's really no difference. You can basically, you can actually make a separate copy for test dev, or you could actually get a copy of production into the cloud. You could either use the one that the backup copy you've made, or actually make another copy and then do exactly the same process. And all of a sudden, you've got a test dev environment leveraging the same techniques that you're going to do anyway, because you've got to back it up. You've got to protect your environment. Now you're actually providing test and dev to your departments who actually need that type of functionality. It's that simple. Workloads in the cloud. Now, this is an interesting one. Who thinks all their data in the cloud is protected? Good. The message has finally gotten through. Durability does not equal recoverability, right? So the reality is when you put data up into a storage blob, you know, there's some ridiculous number, 11 nines of durability or whatever they call it, which basically means you won't get corrupted data. And the reality is that it's true, because if you think about the history of hardware, right, back in the day, I've been doing this thing for almost 20 years, right? It probably shows my age. But, you know, hardware wasn't as reliable as it is today, and it's gone for that evolution, you know, redundancy and much more reliable. And the cloud is basically built on very, very reliable hardware. But, you know, as we all know, the cloud is just basically a data center with storage and servers and networks, and things do actually break. But the reality is it's actually human error. Human error is by far, any statistic you read is about the user going in and deleting a table or doing something silly that you simply can't recover. Now, in Azure and all the other public cloud providers, they obviously do replication between multiple regions and things like that, and six regions and all that good stuff. But, you know, once again, garbage in, garbage out, replicates pretty fast between six regions, and you're pretty much toast, right? So protecting workloads in the cloud is actually vitally important. How we do it? Very similar to what I've spoken about today, right? On-premise, you basically make a local copy for local recovery. You can then replicate that up to the cloud for a disaster recovery copy. The stuff that's actually in the cloud, you can actually back it up locally into the cloud. And then if you needed to restore the copy from DC1 into the cloud, you could. Or in fact, you can do it the other way as well. Right? So basically what it's giving you is giving you like my workloads that are in the cloud, they get backed up there. And I can actually either restore them back to an on-premise data center or actually have a secondary copy back onto an on-premise data center. And that might sound crazy, but more and more customers are looking, I'm going to the cloud, I'm actually going to back up in the reverse direction now. So I'm going to move all my production to Azure, the whole lot, and I'm going to reduce my infrastructure on-premise, but I'm going to back up in the reverse direction, right? And that's actually becoming more and more popular, because it's just, you know, one CIO I spoke to said, you know, I want to go to the cloud, but I need an exit strategy, right? I don't think Microsoft will be going bankrupt anytime soon, but, you know, the story that frightens them was the story of Nvonix, if you may or not be familiar with Nvonix, but Nvonix was one of the very first storage cloud providers on the market. They went bankrupt and gave all their customers 24 hours to get their data out of the cloud, right? I mean, if you've got petabytes of data, you're pretty much toast. So some organizations, also for compliance reasons possibly, they need a method to go out. You could also then, of course, have a secondary data center as well. So what some organizations are doing from an architectural point of view is you've got a prod and a DR on physical, because that's quite what you need, and basically your T1 and your T2 apps are sort of sitting on these data centers. But you know what, I'm going to put my T3 apps up into the cloud and actually just sort of do backups between all of them, so I'm actually protected across the board, okay? So what a real-world use case for DR to the cloud. Right, so the customer, global fashion retailer, data centers worldwide, but their current data solution was basically $80,000 a month to a DR provider, which is in, and funnily enough, that 80 grand, all that actually got them was a place to restore their tapes. So they had a stack of tapes, and they basically had a 48-hour RTO, which is just nuts. And what would actually happen is that, you know, the problem with this, of course, is, example, if you have a regional disaster, say, I don't know, a flood takes out an entire state, whatever it is, and that whole state comes rushing to this DR provider to restore their tapes, you're toast, basically. You're not going to get it up and running. And it's costing you a pretty penny to do it as well, right? So what do? They started using Azure, right, and they reduced, and this is nuts, right? Almost $1 million down to less than 100K. Right, it's just that speaks for itself, right? They went to a 4-hour RPO and RTO, virtual or physical. Two key points here. MA, so media agent, says from the before, the data movers that we actually have. You basically, from a Commvault perspective, you only spin that stuff up and down in the cloud when you need it. It doesn't have to be sitting there just constantly running, right? Backup job starts, you spin it up, you do your backup job, shut it down, that's great. Next day, same sort of thing. In the event of a disaster recovery, you spin it up, restore, shut it down again. So it's not actually costing you any money while it's sitting up there. And you can also use drive shipping to seed the data as well. So you've got large amounts of data. Pumping it all over a pipe's not always necessarily going to be the best way to do it, right? So what did it look like? It's a bit of an eye chart, but I quite like it. So we've got six sites. We've got Pennsylvania, New York, Italy, Hong Kong, China, New Jersey. What they're doing is what they actually do with, and Commvault basically runs the entire environment. So you basically got over here, they're all backing up locally, as you can see, for that sort of quick recovery copy. And they're in multiple regions. So they're obviously in the Americas, Europe, Asia as well, ASEAN as well. They then actually will then copy, they have some DR copies actually into the cloud itself. So basically at any time they need to actually do a disaster recovery event, they can actually do it in the cloud. So if they lose Hong Kong, they can come back up in, they can come back up here in Azure. China, same thing. In this particular instance, they're actually doing it from New Jersey and China into this region here. But China was then also replicated over here for Hong Kong, and so on and so forth. The interesting thing about this, though, is if you actually look at the numbers, it's actually not a lot of data there. It's like less than about 60 terabytes, I think it was. But they're paying $80,000 a month to protect 60 terabytes, right? And by going to here, they dropped it from $1 million a year down to basically less than 100K, which is quite incredible, right? On that, I'm going to flip over to Chris, and he's going to show you most of the things I spoke about. So, Chris, it's all yours.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Michael. I'm just going to switch over to the demo screen and see if it comes up. All right, so how many people in the room here are familiar with this interface? Yeah, we've all played with Azure at some point in time. What I wanted to do today with this demonstration process is to kind of give you something that you can take away, maybe go back to your environment, whether you're already a Commvault customer or not, maybe download a trial copy of Commvault. Whether you're an Azure subscriber or not, maybe get a free subscription tier, and within a few minutes, you could be backing up to the cloud. And so the first demonstration today is in line with the theme of Michael's presentation is, let's get data to the cloud first. And you might remember Michael talking about, we don't rely on any appliances. We get data directly to the cloud. So the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go to storage, and I'm gonna go to new, and I'm gonna create a new storage blob. And let's say if we go, MS Ignite AU, that's available. I know it's not the right one, but the other one's taken in every single region geographically, so. I'll change the redundancy just to be locally redundant because we're not really doing anything special today, and I create the storage account. So as you can see, and you've probably all done this at some point, it's off creating the storage blob. And what's gonna happen is that once that storage blob is ready for us to effectively utilize, in Azure, you'd be able to create a virtual machine, you'd be able to put your VHD repository on there, et cetera. But we see that as a target for Commvault to write to. It's a backup target, it's an archive target, it's a replication target. These are all one and the same things for us from that single platform product. So we'll wait for that to create. And this is what Commvault actually looks like. This is your first look at the product. Now, in the left-hand side, you'll notice that we have all of our client computers, and I only have two in this little demo environment, but one's called Azure, and one's my ComServe, which is the server that I'm protecting. Let's see if our storage has been created yet. Resolving DNS, and we should be up and running. So the next thing you'll notice is when the storage blob is created, and you can see it's online now, you'll notice this manage access keys down here. So obviously we can't just write straight out to this REST API target. We need to have some kind of security mechanism. So if I click on manage access keys, you'll notice I have a primary and a secondary key, and the name is the MS Ignite AU. See this little icon here, I can copy that key, so I don't have to actually drag and select it because it's quite a large string. And I head over to my Commvault environment, and I go into libraries, and I right click on libraries and click add cloud storage library. I'm gonna give it a name. I'm gonna call this the Azure Cloud Library. And you'll notice I have a type here drop-down box. Now, it defaults to the first one in the list. It's alphabetical order, but you'll notice down here I have Microsoft Azure Storage. So immediate native access direct to the cloud target. Now, I believe it was MS Ignite AU, if I'm not mistaken. And I just paste my access key. And then the container can be anything you like. You can create multiple containers. So I'm just going to call this one DR Backup and hit OK. Now, what that's going to do is that's going to send those credentials out to Microsoft based on the blob storage we just created. And when it comes back on authenticates, you'll notice I have an Azure Cloud Library. That's it. I'm ready to write to the cloud. I'm ready to backup. I'm ready to archive. All done in a matter of seconds. So this is something that if you have Commvault or if you have Azure or if you have neither, you can get free trials of both, and you can demonstrate to your business backup to the cloud within a couple of minutes. So then how do we start backing up to this target? The first thing we need to do is create a storage policy. The storage policy is what governs how long you keep data on that cloud storage target, but it also governs your data lifecycle. We're talking about from cradle to the grave, right? We do our first snapshot, we then back it up to disk, maybe back it up to another tier of storage in a DR site, and then eventually off to the cloud for long-term retention. So this is what helps us actually keep track of that data. So I'm going to call it my Azure policy. And you'll notice that the library that it wants me to use, it's the first one in the list, the Azure Cloud Library. Next is the media agent. So this is that software component that Mike was talking about earlier. We can drop a media agent anywhere. It moves data in and out of the cloud. And here's where we set our retention. So I'm going to set this one just to be 7 days and one cycle. Lastly, do I want deduplication with this? So we can actually dedupe to the cloud. Just for today's demo purpose, I'm going to leave it deactivated and then hit finish. And what I have here now is a storage policy called my Azure policy where I can start sending backups and archives to. I know it's going to be on the cloud for 7 days. You can set that to infinite retention, years, etc. So now to kick off a backup, I'm going to go up here to my file system client, and I've got some data for the cloud that I've prepared earlier. But you'll notice the storage policy is currently set to on-site disk. I'm now going to change it to my Azure policy. And I'm going to kick off a backup. So what this is going to do now is that data for the cloud, you'll notice my subclient here, is now backing up to my Azure policy. That is now sending data up to that storage blob that we just created. We're going to go take a look at what that looks like in just a moment. So while that backup is running, I just want to show you very quickly, we spoke about all the different types of clients that we can protect. And I want us to start with applications. You'll notice here that Commvault treats applications in their native format. Is anyone here running Exchange clusters, DAG clusters? Yep. Anyone here running SQL Always On? Yeah. Anyone running SharePoint Farms? Yep. They're getting more and more complex, distributed, continuous cluster replication. Should I back up the passive node, et cetera? Most backup products are hit or miss. You know, I have to put on all the nodes to see which one it's active on to get my successful backup. I'll give you an example here of an Exchange DAG. This will actually go out, automatically discover the DAG, and automatically add all of the member servers to that DAG. Another example is SharePoint, right? I'll touch on SQL just briefly. A SQL, what we call an application group. This is where you can add all of the SQL instances, identify the availability group, and again, we've got options to back up the passive node, back up the node in the DR site, etc. Lastly, I'll show you what the SharePoint farm looks like. Again, you find the associate member servers and you can add all of the servers. We know what's an application host. We know what's a SQL database in the SharePoint farm. We know which one is a web front end, etc. So you can feel rest assured through this pseudo client type concept that we can protect those applications in their native state. Now you'll notice this other one we have here, a virtualization client. As Michael mentioned, we're 100% agentless. We deploy Hyper-V, automatically discover all the guests, and we even protect the agents in those guests. We also protect virtual machines in the Azure cloud. So automatically discover instances that you've deployed in Azure and start protecting them up in the cloud as well. So we see here our backup is now at the archive index stage, so we're about to hit 100%. And what we can then do is actually go over to our storage blob, which we just created, and we can actually see the data in there. So 100% successful. Let's head over to our storage blob, which we've just created. Look inside, look at the containers. And there's our DR backup container, which is created by Commvault. And if we have a look inside, it doesn't make much sense to the naked eye there, but basically what this is a whole lot of backup data that we formalize into chunk files. And if we did deduplication, then these would be different types of chunk files with dedupe. So there's a very quick example of creating cloud storage in Azure, create the cloud library in Commvault, create a quick storage policy to govern how we're going to manage that storage resource, and then wrote a backup out there. So the next stage of the demonstration becomes, so my data's in the cloud, so what, right? And we're talking about all the use cases. We want test dev environments, we want disaster recovery, automated, orchestrated disaster recovery. But Commvault, a little while back, sat down and said to themselves, okay, I can get data out to the cloud, but once it's there, what am I going to do with it? The number one use case at the time was, I need to do disaster recovery. But before we had the provisioning and the orchestration capabilities, it was, I can't restore to the cloud unless there's a virtual machine there with the agent on it for me to start restoring data to. So the first thing we came up with was a provisioning policy. And you'll notice down here, we've got these VM lifecycle policies. And before I create one live, I just want to jump back out to the Azure console and have a look at this, right? Who here has deployed a virtual machine instance in Azure? Yeah, so you're familiar with these A0s, A1s, A2s, and then eventually they came out with these guys, the Gs, yeah? And you heard Michael talking about almost $12 an hour, an $8,000 a month instance, right? When we're talking about to CFOs and CIOs, we're going to give your end users the ability to deploy their own virtual machines. A while back when they didn't really know much about it, they're like, yeah, cool, let them deploy infrastructure. Look how quick it is. Then they got the bill at the end of the month, and someone in test dev said, I'm so important, I need a Godzilla VM, so I'm just going to deploy 10 of them. And all of a sudden, this massive bill came in, and they said, we need some method of controlling this process, but we also want to tie it to my backup and recovery solution. So you're all familiar with this process, right? We go to virtual machines and we do a new instance, right? Compute. Let's say we'll pick one from the gallery, right? And the first thing is going to come up and say, choose an image. So I'll go Windows 2012 data center. And then when I hit next, straight away I've got to give it a name, whether it's basic or standard tier, and then here I go. The user that I'm logged in as, I can just go straight in and deploy a G5, and there's my $8,000 bill at the end of the month straight away. So what we're doing from a Commvault perspective through this VM lifecycle concept is we can go in here and create a policy that allows end users to deploy virtual machines in any cloud, private or public. For today's example, I'm going to use Azure, but you can deploy in Hyper-V as well. And let's say I give mine a name. I'm just going to call it Dev Test DR. And under my advanced policy features, the first thing you notice is how many VMs can a user deploy? I'm going to say only one at a time. The next thing I'm going to do is, because it's Dev and Test, what they tend to do is deploy virtual machines up there and then leave them running and racking up bills. So I'm going to say, you know what, I'm going to time bomb you to expire after 7 days. That's your quota, 7 days. And I can associate every single virtual machine that gets created into my Azure client group so that I can see and keep track of all the VMs that are created on Azure by this policy in Commvault. Now, I can give it a bit of a description, or I can just go straight away to the next step. Now, first thing it's going to ask me which client I have. It's Azure, and I'm going to set the region to my East US. And then, as you guys know, if you've ever deployed a virtual machine, you need to provide the cloud service and the blob storage for the VHDs as well as the compute, right? So I'm going to select my cloud service and I'm going to select my, let's try this one. See if this guy's got any storage that we can use. try this one demo. Okay, so the next thing you can see is I can either allow every single size of virtual machine or I can limit them to a specific set. So I'm going to say only the A0, the A1, and the A2. And then lastly, it's the templates, right? If this particular test dev team, they're pretty much only using Windows, so I'll scroll down and find my Windows templates. Let's see where we've got them. There we go, we've got a Server Essentials here, so we'll give them one of those. And we'll scroll down and find another template. So you can see not only are we allowing a capability to control what the users deploy, but what we're also doing here is making it easier. We're simplifying it. We're showing them all they need to deploy for their systems. You can specify the max number of disks and size that they deploy. And here's a nice one that our customers like as well. Basically, every single VM that gets deployed will have this prefix name so that you know what they're deploying. So if I call this dev test dr- and then star. Lastly, who gets access to this? So it's which group, which client group or which user is going to be deploying these virtual machines. And I'll just leave it as the user that I'm logged in as. I get a nice little summary of what's going on here. And then I hit finish. Okay. So now I have this dev test DR storage policy. How do I actually execute it as an individual user? So what we provide is this web console. This is effectively the end user self-service interface that our users see. Whether this is going in for backup and restore of my own data for my desktops, laptops, my file server shares, or whether it's me going in and wanting to run some kind of analytics on my emails to see how many messages have I stored in Exchange that are probably too stale and should have been archived. We've got those detailed analytics, we've got self-service restore, we've got self-service VM provisioning now, which is what we're going to look into next. So while that's logging in, we'll go back out to our cloud environment. And you can see we've only got three virtual machines here in our OpenScale DC cloud service. Oops, virtual machines, there we go. Now let's bring up the web console. So here you can see access to my data, reports, or here's virtual machines, manage your virtual machines. So this is where the theme of Beyond Backup kicks into play. You know we do archive, you know we do replication, we've got the backup data up into the cloud, now we're doing some provisioning. We're actually going to create a virtual machine. And you've got this button here, create virtual machine. Now because I'm logged in as admin, I can see all of the provisioning policies, but we've just created one called DevTestDR, and there it is. I hit next, and straight away you'll notice the naming pattern's there, right, with the star. So as soon as I start typing, that's a DevTestDR123. If I try and change it, it goes yellow straight away. If I hover over it, it's going to tell me the naming pattern must be DevTestDR. So I'll call it 123, and that lets me in. Now, number of VMs. Let's say I want two. Again, it's not going to let me go past, and it says number of VMs not allowed to exceed one. So you can see here where this policy is kicking in now, and the end user, I only have two images that I can choose from to deploy this VM. It's no longer the entire catalog of images where you have to scroll through and try and find it. Very simplified. It's going to be a Server 2012 R2. Now, you need to provide a username and password, because obviously once it's deployed, we need to be able to authenticate and log in. And lastly, the size. This is where the financial control in the organization looks at this and says, finally, I have some control wrapped around what I can deploy. These little A0s, you know, a few cents, 0.02 cents an hour versus the $12 an hour Godzilla monsters that we were looking at before. So we'll just deploy an A0. And here we can select which network to write to. And then lastly, we get a little summary of what we've just went through, and we click finish. And what happens is this actually gone out and says the request has been submitted successfully. And what we've got over here back in our GUI is virtual machine management, a Create VM job has kicked off. So again, beyond backup, you'll see archive jobs in Commvault. You'll see replication jobs in Commvault. You'll see disaster recovery jobs. You'll see VM provisioning jobs. You'll see orchestrated DR, et cetera. Now, while that VM is being provisioned, one of the things I wanted to very quickly cover today is our concept of workflows. We talked about the orchestration of disaster recovery. And one of the workflows here that's actually built into the product, which you can take and modify, is this DR testing workflow. Now, what this does is this allows you to take any process that maybe starts with, let's do a backup over here. Was the backup successful? Okay, replicate it to there. Was the replication successful? Great. Now, restore it up to here. Was it successful? Yes. Power it on. Run some tests. My DR is complete. So you'll notice that what we're actually giving our end users, I like to call it as giving dev skills to people who don't have dev capabilities, right? Now, probably not everyone here can write a script, but almost everyone here could draw a flowchart like this, right? If I have a DR process in my mind, I want to do a backup, replicate, restore, I could draw this process, and this is what we're providing in Commvault. I can go here and basically edit and change and drag and drop these decisions in these subroutines, draw the process, and that will then automate that in Commvault. I now have this scripting capability without needing to script. I can automate the DR of any custom application or group of virtual machines, change their IP addresses when they come online in Azure, et cetera. So we've gone from backup to replication to provisioning to orchestration. All of this beyond backup capability built into the one product. So let's see how our Create VM job has gone. We're at the 90% mark, so we should probably check our Azure status. And you see, there you go, there's a new VM being created in Azure called our DevTest DR123, and it's in the starting phase. So that there's that true end-to-end process. And then once it's powered up and once it's online, one of the main questions we get is, okay, it's in the cloud now, can I then continue to back it up? Because I'm migrating, you know, I'm moving my data over to the cloud for migration purposes, or I'm running a hybrid cloud. We can actually edit those templates to have a Commvault agent built in or leverage our agentless capability. So the last thing that I want to show you very quickly today, before we get into some question time, is back to the source where we're protecting the data. A lot of customers are coming to us saying, I want to get data up into the cloud, but the tools that I'm being quoted are very expensive, these migration tools, et cetera. You know, your Commvault, you've helped us in the past migrate from old Exchange versions to new Exchange versions, just doing a backup and a restore. So it's the same concept with whether you want to migrate from VMware to Hyper-V or you want to get from Hyper-V up to Azure. Irrespective of how you're being protected, here's an example of our Hyper-V environment, right? The first thing I'll do is show you our, and there's that 100% completed. If we just quickly jump over, we'll see our running provisioning VM. Now, in terms of finding content, here we've got some virtual machines, but I can actually go in and browse, and I've got hosts, or I've got VMs, or I can actually go by storage. Anyone here running cluster share volumes with their Hyper-V environment? And those cluster share volumes, are they're probably on an array, right? Like a NetApp or a HDS or something like that. So we can go in and find VMs based on the cluster shared volume they're on. And the main reason we would do that is you'll notice this IntelliSnap operations tab. What we're doing here is actually saying, show me all the virtual machines on a particular volume, because I know that volume is mapped to a LUN on the array. And I can say, all right, use IntelliSnap. And here in the drop-down list, I'll start going through it very slowly, but probably everyone in the room here will be able to relate to one of these array vendors. And when you heard Michael talking about earlier, we've practically got every single array vendor and technology and clone and snapshot capability out there, even some that some people haven't even heard of yet. You know, there's probably not an array vendor out there that we don't support yet natively. So there's your whole entire cradle to the grave, my my backup strategy, my disaster recovery strategy, or my platinum SLA snapshots on the array. I mount up those snapshots, I do a dedupe backup. I replicate that out to my DR site, or I send it straight up into the cloud. And then when it comes time to push that DR button, I deploy it into the cloud through a controlled mechanism, policy, and then I orchestrate that disaster recovery process. So you tick off all of those boxes using one product, the one console, and giving that power to your end users, taking the pressure off the IT department. So we've got about five more minutes. I was going to conclude there, but one thing that I will show you very quickly is the recovery capabilities and where we were talking about the concept of restoring to a different target. So here's my Hyper-V backups. I can restore them back to Hyper-V, or I can go straight to Azure. Same concept if I'm currently protecting a VMware environment. So I'll go down here to vCenter. And we've got a lot of customers coming to us saying that, I've just renewed my enterprise license agreement with Microsoft. And they've given me a whole bunch of Azure that I want to utilize now. But more importantly, we have a project to migrate off VMware and onto Hyper-V. So here's an environment where, I'll just get in there. So we've got some dev test VMs. Let's just say we want to send all these virtual machines up into the cloud. So I've got browse and restore, and then straight away I can restore them out to Hyper-V. So there's your VMware to Hyper-V native conversion, VMDK to VHD or VHDX. Instant power on at the target site or Azure. So I can go straight to Azure, and I can choose, again, the cloud service, the blob storage that I deploy to. You can create it on the fly in this process. So if you're thinking, I want to go hybrid, or if you're thinking, I want to move workloads into the cloud, your backup and recovery tool is your best bet. If you're thinking migration, old platform to new platform, everything's there in the one tool. So with that, thank you very much for your time. I'd like to open up for any questions. Yes? So this process here doesn't require the media agent to be in Azure. Where we would recommend having the media agent in Azure is if you're running workloads up there and you want them protected up there. Now, you might have remembered Michael talking about that use case where the customer started putting everything up into the cloud as their DR site. And the most key takeaway that I want people to take from here is Commvault is software only. The media agent is a software component. It runs on a VM in the cloud, and it only activates itself when it needs to. So if you're thinking of the costs of an infrastructure component that's basically a backup and recovery system, this is one that brings itself online when it's getting replication data in, powers itself off. So it really saves you money as compared to a physical equivalent or a 24/7 virtual machine. Yeah. So yeah, you can write straight up there from here. Don't need a virtual machine. And the reason behind it is we create these target instances. So you see my Azure client here. I can actually go in here and see all of the systems that are on there. And you could also see them here where I went to create my VM. If I go to the page, that dev test 123, that me as a self-service user, there's my dev test 123 system. He's still being provisioned. From here, I can actually power him on, power him off, delete him, etc. I don't need anything Commvault up in Azure to do that. It's only for kind of subsequent ongoing processes, but great question. Any other questions? Yes?
I mean, vague question, but say you have 50 terabytes of email.
Yep.
And you wanted that backed up to the cloud.
Yep.
And currently you put it on a tape drive, where's it going to go?
So if you're currently backing up to tape and you wanted to switch to back up to the cloud, 50 terabytes is 50 terabytes. We all have to abide by the laws of physics and, link speeds and even with deduplication, you might get that down to a significant size on the first run, but then that will reduce it to, a data set that you still have to send over the wire. So you remember at the beginning of the demonstration today, We created the cloud library. I'll just connect back out to that box. So the cloud library becomes like a tape library. The number one use case for adopting cloud storage is tape replacement. People want to get rid of their tapes. They want to use cloud as the, that kind of long-term storage tier. So here I am in Azure where I've created that the blob storage. Let me just log back into this host. And you remember when I created the cloud library, I then went and created an Azure policy. Oh, you missed. Oh, okay. Oh, so you missed the first half. Sorry. So what we actually did was we created blob storage in Azure. We then switched over to Commvault over here, and I went to libraries, and I went add. So normally disk or tape, but I just went add cloud storage library. And here in the drop-down box, I just selected Microsoft Azure storage. Native, no appliances. We wrote a backup straight to the cloud library. Yep. I think these sessions are being recorded anyway, so maybe... you can check it out at a later stage and see the demo. Yep. Yes? Yes,
you mentioned that backups and restore can happen with the agent and agent delays.
Correct.
Situations
excellent question. And I think over the years, it was kind of the final frontier, really, wasn't it? Was getting agentless backups of virtual machines. But really, the one that was kind of stuck on everyone's mind was applications. So you heard Michael talking about we can now provide backups of applications without having to put agents in the guests. That's the last kind of scenario. Let me just show you something really quick. You'll notice here I've got a backup options. This is for Hyper-V. Obviously, we do it for all the virtual infrastructures. But you can see we're using change block tracking, and we perform application consistent backup or crash consistent. Now, if you wanted to put an agent in the guest, it would mean that you have very specific application activity, such as truncating logs is a great example. In fact, it's the most common example, right? There are other scenarios where you might want to get a level of granularity that you don't get with protecting the whole container. So these days you might be, oh, look, if it crashes, just restore the whole VM. At least the app will be consistent in that point in time. But how many more... customers, or do you guys are saying you're putting more and more mission critical apps into the cloud now, and these are on, you know, 5 minute recovery point objectives. You're doing transaction logs every 5 minutes, 10 minutes. That's where an agent in the guest becomes more and more prevalent, because you're not going to restore the whole container when one of your mission critical systems goes down. You want those database logs back quickly, and from that point in time. So that's really the only scenario left. But what we're doing now is, depending on the scenario, and you know, Michael mentioned the appropriate backup strategy, the appropriate VM. You wouldn't back up your Oracle database the way you back up your Active Directory, the way you back up a file system. We're going to inject on the fly agents into guests where there is an application live, so you don't have to deploy and install. Yeah. Cool. Any other questions? Again. I love your questions. I just want to show you one last thing, because we get this question asked a lot. I've spoken a lot about migrating, you know, VMware to Hyper-V, VMware to Azure, Hyper-V to Azure. What about those physical boxes that are still out there, right? If they're x86, I can take any one of these machines. They might have even been decommissioned physical backups from years ago. Someone's like, oh, we're going to get that data back. Can't provision a physical system anymore. You'll notice this virtualize me. So I can take any physical system that I've backed up, even can be have laid dormant for years. So it's a good way to decommission your physical systems, but still have the capability to virtualize them, deploy them as one of these private tiers, and then eventually you can then take it from there and out to the cloud. We've pretty much got a widget for everything. Commvault's just a bunch of geeks writing some really good software. One product, you know, kind of does it all. Cool. No other questions? All right. Thank you very much for your time. I think we're going to draw a prize now, yeah, for everyone in the room. Well, let's...
You draw it.
All right, we'll see who's the lucky winner. You got all your raffle tickets ready? Win a $200 JB Hi-Fi voucher. Was that sorry? Oh, has everyone got a ticket? No? Who's not got a ticket? Ah, need a ticket there, gee. You were the first one in here. All right. What number is he? Hey, look at that. We got our winner.
Shake it all up.
All right. You want to? Oh, okay. There you go. And we'll see who the lucky winner is. Called bingo.
Purple C18.
Do you have a purple C18? There we go. Hey. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
All right. Guys, thank you very much for your time today, and good luck with your Azure endeavors. And remember, get the Commvault free trial, get your Azure subscription free trial, write it back up to the cloud and show your company how quick it is.
See you guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Sorry, I had to step out for 10 minutes. I don't know if you covered it.
Yeah.
With your cloud connector.
Where's the winner? Sorry, I'm trying to remember who it was here.
With your cloud connector going to...